good afternoon, everybody. This is Barb Pello, Group Director at InfoTrends, and I'm delighted that you could join us today for the Konica Minolta series, Power Up Profit, and see a webinar that's a very timely topic titled Seize the Data. And today I'm joined by Kevin Seaman, and Kevin is the Director of Analytics at Catalyst, a direct marketing agency out of the Rochester area. And before we get started, what I would like to do is just spend a minute taking you through some tips relative to enjoying the webinar. Basically, what I tell you is that if you're having any technical difficulties whatsoever, let us know by using the Ask a Question box, or you can troubleshoot by clicking the Help button below. Please make sure that you disable pop-up blockers. To get a PDF version of this presentation, you can click the Download Slides button. If you like what you're seeing and you're hearing, you can tell your peers by using the Invite a Colleague button. Or you can let us know by clicking the Survey button and sending your feedback. In addition, we'll be taking questions throughout the session. So all you have to do is click on the Q&A button and ask your question. Finally, you can view this event on demand for the next 90 days. And Alexis, if you'll advance to the topic slide, what I'd like to do is spend a few minutes sharing with the audience what we'll be discussing. First of all, I'm going to spend just a few minutes talking about data-driven marketing, what and why. And then what Kevin's going to be doing is he's going to be sharing with you an agency perspective. Next, I'll discuss with you some of the critical success factors for the print service provider. I'll wrap up with some recommendations and conclusions. And again, throughout the course of the webinar, please ask your questions. Now, one of the most important things that we're seeing relative to data-driven marketing is that it's what marketers want. And what you're seeing in this market space is that marketers understand that relevancy can prevent customer defection, they can improve customer satisfaction, increase customer spending, and reduce the overall marketing costs. InfoTrends recently completed a multi-client study entitled the Cross-Media Direct Marketing Opportunity. And what we did is we surveyed more than 450 marketers. Over 39% of the marketing campaigns were in fact segmented, one to few, and another 21% were in fact highly personalized, one to one. What that means is, in today's market, what we're seeing is that over 60% of the marketing campaigns that are being produced are in fact highly targeted. Data-driven personalization and customization are essential as businesses seek to establish more meaningful relationships with prospective and current customers. Successful service providers are working with clients on a combination of segmentation and data accumulation. And we're seeing those savvy service providers build the skills or establish partnerships to help clients synthesize a large amount of consumer data in terms of key target market segments. What we've done is we've really confirmed through our studies that marketers need assistance with data analytics, and that creates an opportunity for agencies like Catalyst, as well as print service providers. Now, this next slide talks to how data-driven marketing actually works. What happens is you'll find that your customers are collecting both customer and sales data. It includes things like contact information, as well as recent transaction data. What they'd like the ability to do is consolidate, profile, rate, and analyze, and then use that information to create a marketing campaign. Throughout that marketing campaign, what they want to be able to do is evaluate results. They'd like to be able to evaluate those results real time, compare the campaign results, make corrections, and modify it on the fly. Now, when you look at why data-driven marketing, what we're seeing is that it really gives people the ability to leverage information based on predictive models that look at what the customer might have the highest probability at buying next. It provides targeting with a higher probability of being read and an overall reduction in the campaign costs. It lets you provide personalized customer offers. It gives you the ability to drive clients to repeat purchases. In a challenging economy, money is spent only where necessary, and that means you can increase return on investment. In addition, you've got the ability to do a great job at tracking and identifying the best revenue sources. And so what people are looking for is a 360-degree of your data, 360-degree view of your data. And what that means is that you want to be able to integrate demographic, behavioral, and transactional data to provide a comprehensive view of that customer. When we talk about transactional data, it can be name and address, email addresses, IP addresses, mobile numbers, locations. And when I talk about behavioral data, it's the demographics, the psychographics, the buying habits, and the preferences. And basically what we're seeing is that people are working to collect both on- and offline transactional and behavioral data and use it in connecting with customers and prospects via cross-media channels where marketers are going to experience the greatest successes. Now, when we talk about data and what's being collected, one of the bigger challenges is that in a lot of instances, the data is being collected, but in fact, it's not being used. This next slide depicts some information that we collected in the capturing the cross-media marketing opportunity. And what it does is it looks at the data that marketers are storing versus the data they're actually using. And what you'll find is that while they're collecting a lot of data, in a lot of instances, they're in fact not using that data to generate a good, solid marketing campaign. This next slide talks about the challenges for marketing data. And we asked those marketers what the top three data-related challenges were when executing a marketing campaign. It included data integrity and reliability, acquiring external data from a number of different sources, mining and analyzing that data, the actual availability of the data, regulatory compliance with a number of different issues in terms of government, financial, et cetera, augmenting that internal data with new information, and gaining access, because in a lot of instances, that data is siloed. And finally, what we're seeing are some very frightening statistics. There's a recent book out by Mark Jeffrey, and it's titled Data-Driven Marketing, and it's the 15 metrics everyone in marketing should know. And basically what it says is that 57% of marketers do not use a centralized database to track and analyze campaigns. 70% don't use an enterprise data warehouse. 71% don't use an enterprise data warehouse and analytics to guide campaign selection. 80% don't use an integrated data source to guide automated event-driven marketing. And 82% never track and monitor marketing campaigns. The message for all of you is that there's huge, huge opportunity in terms of data-driven marketing programs. The challenge is really helping that marketing executive sees the data. And what I'm going to do now, and the only other comment I want to make, and this happens to be one of my favorite quotes from Jack Welch, is that in a world where data is king, we have to pay attention to what's going on outside. And I love this quotation from Jack Welch, and he says, you know, when the rate of change outside exceeds the rate of change inside, the end is in sight. And I think what we've got to do is help those marketers cope with the rate of outside change. Now, with that, what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn over to Kevin Seaman, and Kevin's going to talk to you about analytics and the secret to breakthrough business results. Take it away, Kevin.
Thanks, Barb. Hi, I'm Kevin Seaman. I'm the director of analytics at Catalyst, and Catalyst is a, I would say, mid-size direct and digital marketing agency. We're in Rochester, New York, and we have about 80 marketing professionals, of which About 15 to 20 are data and technology and analytics professionals. So at our agency, analytics really drives the marketing strategy that we develop for our clients. We have a variety of clients. About half of our business is B2B and about half B2C, and we actually see those two disciplines really converging. Typically or historically, the B2C discipline has been significantly more data-driven and a real depth of data and analytics applied to that that didn't go over across into the B2B audience, but we see more of those disciplines and techniques really moving into the B2B space and some of those B2B analytic-driven campaigns really taking hold and those disciplines really being rolled out. So today I'm going to focus on some of the data and analytic techniques that we use that drive the marketing campaigns. I'm not going to get into as much some of the data techniques that a lot of the print service providers already have pretty depth of mastery in, things like data hygiene, VDP, personalization, data quality, all of those things that really have been being expanded in recent years. I'm going to focus more on more analytic techniques and how those things are leveraged to drive performance in direct marketing campaigns. So I have a slide here that I outline what I call the framework for success in performance-based marketing. So when I say performance-based marketing, it's marketing which is measured, optimized, and designed to really improve the measurable marketing results, not necessarily drive-by marketing shootings, for instance, but more disciplined, ongoing marketing efforts. So the first key thing that I always fall back on is to be successful, there needs to be well-defined objectives. Often the client and the marketer and the printer may not all be on the same page in terms of what are the key business outcomes that this campaign needs to drive. So we see often disconnects between a sales organization and a marketing organization on the client side. What things need to happen to make this client successful? Sometimes the thing that we look back on sort of jokingly is to say, what's my client's bonus based on to figure out how am I going to make my client successful? Once we've gotten over that hurdle, an agreement on the metrics that we're going to use to measure the campaign. So is it response? Is it profit? Is it leads generated? Is there an ROI component? How is that going to be measured? And come up with a clear, defined methodology for measurement that everyone can agree that when we're done, were we successful, were we not successful, what would we do differently? And without clear metrics, it's difficult to plot a course forward to optimize the direct marketing.
Kevin, you highlight here, and I've got a question coming in, you highlight here what I categorize as the very fundamental metrics, response, profit, ROI. Are there any metrics that people use that aren't quite as obvious as those in terms of success-oriented metrics?
Sure. So a metric that's often overlooked, especially with retail clients and clients where there's business that's just coming in on, you know, day-to-day over the wall, is the concept of incremental response. So what response did this direct marketing campaign generate that is incremental to the business that's happening on a day-to-day basis? One of our clients that I'm going to show a piece of work for in the future here is Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Well, typically, any given day, there's thousands of people coming in for an oil change, regardless of whether they get a postcard in the mail. So you can't really measure and claim that that's being driven by the campaign. So we measure, in that case, a holdout sample of people that we hold out of the mail that would have gotten a postcard but don't, sort of an independent treatment, and measure what's the response and conversion rate of that audience, so we can see, oh, the response rate isn't really 27%, it's really more like 1%. And that changes sort of the whole picture of what success looks like in that space.
One other question that just came in, Kevin. Do you have, you talk about response, profit, ROI. Do you do any metrics that link to brand awareness, and how do you do that if you're saying, you know, my objective is to increase the awareness of the brand?
Sure. So sometimes if you're trying to measure brand awareness in a typical fashion, they would use a survey, sort of unaided brand awareness before the campaign and after the campaign. But with a lot of sort of campaigns that aren't a national, aren't of a scale that's that large, it's difficult to be able to invest the amount of money needed to do a full-scale brand, sort of a brand awareness study. But maybe there's proxy metrics to say we want to be able to measure either social media activity, website hits, mentions in, you know, Twitter or whatever that really are a proxy for have we created any buzz or awareness in that space. But it's clear to say, you know, that to be able to try to draw a line from, okay, does website hits, you know, what's the relationship between website traffic and the cash register ringing, you know, is something, you know, that you'd want to explore at least so that you could say, well, web hits don't necessarily make the stock price go up.
Got it. Thanks, Kevin.
The two other components really is to look and see and assess what's the available data that I have to be able to leverage in a direct marketing campaign. So sometimes some of these things are overlooked in terms of their value, and to really make the marketing sing, you want to be able to exploit whatever you have. So as a print service provider, you might have access to historical communications, mail files, who responded in the past. The client is going to have data, things like historical sales transactions, customer lists, maybe web registrations, logins, things of that nature. And at the end of the day, sometimes you come up a little short and you say, well, the client maybe hasn't done a great job of collecting that data in the past. It's sort of a little spotty. You might have to create the raw materials first to say, okay, we're going to get on board with some more diligent and consistent data collection so that 6 months from now, 8 months from now, 12 months from now, we'll really have the data we need to make some really more effective marketing campaigns. At the end of the day, do something. By and large, the KISS principle applies. Keep it simple. Most of the all the complexity that can be created isn't necessarily end up being profitable. So the concept of testing 57 different copy versions to see which is really driving the response we need, and maybe the margin of error on each of those it well exceeds the difference it might make in the marketing campaign, ends up wasting a lot of time and effort and maybe doesn't help you learn the things that you need to learn. Okay, so that was sort of the background of how we think about things. I'm going to go through a few campaign examples just to give you a little bit of a flavor for how we use data in some of these different in these different campaigns. So my first example is a fairly standard sort of product launch campaign. In this case, Kodak was launching a low-end scanner into a new segment of the business that they hadn't participated in before, and it was really targeted towards a small office SoHo market that wasn't a customer base that they had on their existing customer file. So they had high-end, sort of high-end production scanners, and this was a low-end part of the market. So there wasn't a customer base that they could go and market this to. And really, the objective was to drive sales of this product through the channel. In this case, it was being marketed by Kodak and sold through CDW. And so to do that, we identified the targeted segments for this product. It was small paper-intensive businesses like accounting, lawyers, real estate companies, things of that nature, and profiled those audience and created, through some research, the really what are some of the key benefits to be able to drive interest in that audience, and then purchased prospect lists of business of those businesses in those categories that would support the prospecting campaign. And then
Kevin, quick question. Where, understanding that you're an agency, where do you find those kinds of lists?
So in this case, we're looking for for business lists, and we would go to a Dun & Bradstreet or a Donnelly to go and find those lists. But, you know, most often in the case of being an end print service provider customer, it would be look for a list broker that could really help you drive those purchases. So as an amateur or as a sort of infrequent purchaser of those lists, it's going to be difficult to really home in and find what's the best application for this campaign. So a list broker and have an ongoing relationship with them who can go and do research and find the right categories or the right lists that might be appropriate for your campaign would probably be the best way to go.
Got it.
So this campaign was you know, the objectives or the results for this, we really blew away the sales goals for the launch based on fairly highly targeted lists against these audience. So while that's a fairly mundane example of the data that was used in that campaign, I've got a little grid here that will break out by target audience. What are some of the data elements and categories of data that end up being the most useful? So in this case, we were dealing with a prospect universe. I have another prospect campaign that I'm going to show you. But typically you're looking for third-party data from a national data compiler or list compiler. Things that are useful tend to be customer interests or consumer interests that are gathered, demographics in a lot of consumer campaigns. Affluence would play a key role, the ability to afford a product. And then targeted lists. So if there's an affinity or similarity with a particular audience, whether it's a home improvement audience and maybe it's a magazine list for people who are interested in that, those lists would be available through a list broker as well to be able to find me a list that matches my prospective audience. In retail, we always fall back on things like proximity to the location. Even when you don't know a lot about your prospects, marketing history tends to be really important. So every time we execute a marketing campaign, the people that we mail to vote with their feet and either raise their hand or decline to raise their hand. every time someone votes and says, I'm not interested, then they become a lower probability prospect for the next time around. When we're dealing with an audience of leads, people we've had contact with before, people who've raised their hand but maybe not converted, it's really important to try to gather self-reported data, maybe on that first touch. So in the B2B space, when we're using pearls and we're trying to get people to answer questions that qualify themselves, it's important not to waste that opportunity for people to capture even the smallest amount of data that will help them help us segment that audience and talk to them in the future. And then as that, the other things that are really important in that space would be, again, marketing history and recency, like how hot that lead is and when it came in. As we're trying to do lead scoring, which is to qualify and nurture those leads as we push those out into a sales organization.
On this one, Kevin, you're talking a lot about the campaigns themselves. And when you look at the data side of it, one of the questions we've got, because the bulk of our audience is really print service providers. The question I've got is, as you look at this data-driven side of it and what you're doing with getting the lists, managing the data, understanding, you know, purchase frequency, et cetera, how does that translate into print for a print service provider?
Well, for a lot of marketers out there, the print service provider really functions as the client's agency. So the idea of being able to improve their data-driven marketing, the person who's going to advocate that often has to be the print service provider. So the diligence with capturing data, the importance of data capture and data integrity, especially when you mentioned, Barb, the enormous percentage of companies that don't have a marketing database, that was pretty frightening. So I think the one who's going to advocate for data collection in a lot of cases has to be the print service provider.
Now, Kevin, one other quick question for you. You get a lot of people, marketing executives, that come into you and they say, you know, I want to do a direct marketing campaign, and their initial thought is I'm going to do a spray and pray. And how do you convince them, and how would a print service provider convince them to take a campaign and really migrate from that spray and pray environment to using data effectively? What's the talk track and the value prop? How do you do that?
Well, I've got an example that I'm going to get to in a couple of slides, which I'm going to talk about how we convinced a marketer to take a totally different approach to what they've done in the past. So maybe
well,
I'll
hang
get
on
to,
then.
Yeah, hang on to that question.
Okay.
When we move into the active customer base, that third-party external data tends to become not as important. So demographics and things like that tend to take a back seat to the data that the client is collecting directly. So things like purchase frequency, the products that they've purchased, what are the interactions and engagement that are going on with that customer? So are they, do we have their email address? Are they opening emails? Are they interacting with us on the web? And things like customer segments. So maybe it's as simple as products, a product-based segmentation or size in a B2B space, or maybe it's an age categories, for instance, in the consumer space. But those things tend to sort of rise to the top as the data that's most useful when we're marketing to a population of customers that are generally pretty active. Then when we start to think about win-back and retention marketing, someone who we maybe hasn't purchased in a while, we tend to then are dealing with things that aren't quite as fresh. So recency becomes maybe the killer data attribute. How long has it been since they've last bought? What was the frequency that they bought when they were an active customer? What were some of those historical products? And then maybe think about what the life cycle is of the product which they purchased. So if it's a product with a long lead for repurchase, like an automobile, or if it's a piece of equipment that may have a longer life cycle, then those types of things tend to be fairly insightful. So with that as a background, I'm going to talk about another campaign. Here's a customer acquisition campaign where the client in this case is a AAA organization that was doing tons of acquisition marketing that were primarily based at driving quantities of new members. So in Barb's parlance, spray and pray, this was definitely a spray and pray approach to customer acquisition. And so what we ended up doing was doing kind of an analytic deep dive and looking at what was happening to those customers after they became members, and some real eye-opening things to be able to say, let's take those acquisition customers and track them through a couple years of their behavior. And when they see that half of those customers attrite in year one, and maybe a quarter of those customers end up being unprofitable because all they do is use roadside assistance and never buy travel services in this case. So those types of things tend to be pretty eye-opening to a marketing executive to say, wow, maybe I should do something a little different. And also, one of the things we identified in this opportunity was that they were dealing with trying to acquire new customers while they had a pretty extensive database of former customers that weren't being marketed to. And so in this, even in a small even in a small membership base of about maybe a million members, they had 300,000 or 400,000 former members that had attrited that weren't being actively marketed to. So our first acquisition target was look inward towards those former members, and maybe those are your best new customers, are your old customers. But in any case, we were able to use sort of that customer future. We took a sample from years past and looked at what they did to develop an LTV model, or lifetime value, which let us target customers who were most likely to be profitable in the future. And so when we talked about metrics, this was a case where getting people on board with what's the right metric to be looking at. Maybe it's not response rate, but maybe it's profitability, or in this case, profitability within a multi-year window, to say, let's acquire the customers that aren't going to churn, that are going to buy additional services from us that become really valuable customers.
Kevin, one other question that just came in, and I know this is probably a tough one to answer, but you're doing a lot of work on the data analytics side of it. How do you charge for that?
So that's very interesting. So, in our case, we don't charge. We don't charge on a CPM basis. So, while there in this case will be lists generated that are sold and models created, where we create a value equation that's based on an engagement or either an annual analytics retainer budget that says, for certain dollars a month, we're going to drive continuous improvement in your customer base. Sometimes it's hard, it would definitely be challenging maybe for a print service provider to sell that particular business model because a lot of the things are being tied to a campaign or a project. So maybe in that case, it would be a pilot or a proof of concept that says, you know, let's do a data exercise, do a deep dive, look into your customer base, find some insights, develop some tests, analyze those results, and develop some recommendations. So maybe that would be a 3 or 4 month engagement to really demonstrate the value.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Here's another example of a fairly complex VDP piece that has lots of different either both graphics and data that are sliding in and out. We manage the customer database for Goodyear retail stores, and this particular piece is designed to go to a customer to encourage them to come into a retail store and buy tires. It's been an audience or a particular objective that's been challenging. So we, in this case, developed a predictive model which said within the millions of customers that there are, which customers are most likely to buy tires at a certain time, that lets us shrink that audience and find the ones that are most likely to respond that we can sort of make a difference in. And so while there's a lot of, you know, the tires are customized for a make and model, and the prices are variable by month, the real piece is the thing you can't see behind the scenes here, that is the targeting, which says which customers are getting this piece. So it's an audience of that's fairly narrow, that leverages their customer buying behavior, the tread depth that gets measured every time you come in and get serviced, how many miles per year you drive, and things of that nature, that really home in and predict the folks that are most likely to both be in the market and be willing to buy tires. And so that is what really makes this program or this campaign profitable where it wouldn't have been otherwise. And I have one last example. Here's a particular piece that we produce for the Valvoline Instant Oil Change. And again, they have millions of former customers that haven't been active in a year on the database. And we've really demonstrated, again, for these folks, how much more effective it is to re-engage with lost customers than to do acquisition to a never-ever customer that may, you know, as I put it, you know, they've lived for years near your store and never felt the need to come in. So they voted, you know, they voted multiple times that says, not for me. So we really have a fairly comprehensive win-back program for them that focuses on a targeting footprint that uses customer penetration in neighborhoods around stores. There's a win-back model that's primarily based on recency and frequency, so how many times have they visited and how recently, and then uses this map to re-engage them. So there's about 1,000 outlets. Each has their own individual map that reintroduces them to where the store is located and in hopes of driving an opportunity to drive a new visit and re-engage. So that's an example where an acquisition program, the best acquisition program, may in fact be a win-back program.
Now, Kevin, and I know you're going to link to this on your next slide, but I want to just take a second in terms of a philosophy. So what you've got is you've got, in all of these instances, really, direct marketing campaigns that are very data-driven to deliver return on investment and profitability. In from your industry perspective, are companies like Catalyst, and I know there's a number of them out there, willing to sit down and if I'm a print service provider and say, hey, I want to get this program, but I don't have the skills, are you willing to sit down and say, hey, I'll be a good partner, and, you know, we'll work with you on the analytics and help you do the campaign? Have you done that in the past, and is that something that you you like doing? I'm kind of, that's probably a little bit longer question, but.
Well, yeah, that's a great question, Barb, because sometimes, right, the necessity to do ongoing measurement and optimization doesn't really become apparent until you've been hit by the bus. So sometimes, you know, print service providers may lose a piece of business because someone else comes in with an approach that says, hey, you know, maybe we've looked at the results or things and we could do better, or these programs really aren't meeting the business expectations. And so sometimes there's either the ability to do it to yourself, to take the time to say, you know, maybe this program needs to shrink. Maybe it needs to become more efficient, so maybe there's less print dollars in order to keep that business going and active and viable. You know, as we know, direct mail's become, you know, still has become more expensive and potentially not as effective as it's been in the past. So the analytics and targeting really become important to, you know, as we say, get a little more juice for the squeeze.
Yep.
But yeah, we work with and alongside of print service providers. Sometimes the easiest time to do that is on a piece of new business, because then it's a little easier to define the value proposition and what as I put it on the next slide here, what the rules of engagement are. So who's in which box? Who's the how are we going to define the combined value proposition? How do you bill? How do you make money? How do I make money? And sometimes it's easier to do that on business that neither of us have. But when we do come into, you know, often we'll come into business that already exists, and typically the we come on board and let the client or the whichever one of us has the lead on that account sort of takes the lead in terms of driving the strategy and so on. So,
you know, Kevin, and one of the other things that you know, the kind of a quick question, but would be, you know, would somebody like a Catalyst, if I had a big deal and I was a print service provider, and understanding there's a lot of agencies like yourself in each geographic market, but would you partner and actually go on a call and help them structure the deal?
We do that on a I would say, I wouldn't say every week, but when we can define, you know, when there's a win-win situation, when it's clear that there's an opportunity that's where the two of us together really can do 1 + 1 = 3, something that's a profitable engagement, we clearly do partner on those to drive those business opportunities. And you said, you know, we're a local, or you know, we're in Rochester, New York, but typically our customers are nationwide, although I think we like the ones in the Midwest the best, places where we can fly only one leg to. But you know, those customers exist. We sort of have a national customer base, and on many occasions we have an ongoing partnership with some print service providers where we're their sort of go-to agency, and sometimes even lightly brand that offering, and other times it's an ad hoc opportunity where to backfill capabilities that a print service provider might have, or even to help them sort of grow that capability.
Well, I want to spend just a couple minutes talking to you and giving everybody in the audience, and thanks, Kevin, by the way, some specific examples and recommendations for success in terms of embarking down the data-driven path. Over the course of the past few weeks, I actually interviewed a number of print or marketing services providers. And those that were successfully participating in this more lucrative data-driven marketing value chain really had four very common traits. The first thing was they had culture. The second was they had a people and process orientation toward data. They understood data, and they looked at technology. Now, when we think about culture. At the heart of data-driven marketing, it's about a culture that's focused on continuous optimization, iterative improvement, and a focus on blending technology and data to deliver results for customers. It's really getting into that habit of, I want to test, I want to learn, and then I need to adjust. And what we're finding is that the truly successful service providers in the data space have a culture. They've created it or they have it that's linked to the desire to change and become a critical partner in that marketing value chain. I like to give people an example, and one of the companies that I interviewed was Direct Advertising Response, and it was actually formed as a startup in 1995. And the basic premise was the creation of a marketing agency that offered production capabilities with a razor-sharp focus on data-driven marketing. Today, the company employs 55 people, generates 40% of its revenues from data-driven services, and the other 60% from production. And its CEO, Rich Mottram, said, you know, in today's market, it's all about accountable marketing and advertising, and data drives marketing. We've structured DAR so that we can help our customer base leverage data to identify marketing trends, statistically validate information, make data actionable, and ultimately maximize the return on investments for our customers. The second critical component inside of this is people and process. And people and process really give the organization the ability to act. Basically, they offer the ability to execute, react, and adjust. To successfully implement data-driven processes, the service provider really needs to manage the technologies and provide processes and tools for decision-making. One of my favorite examples is Universal. And they really draw on a rich tradition of a consultative customer service and technology-driven solution approach that helps their clients with innovative and cost-effective approaches to communication. For those of you that aren't familiar with Universal, they really consolidated some of the most prestigious names in the printing industry. It included Intercity Press, United Litho, Millennium Graphics, Daniels, and Acme. Today, they've got about 300 people in three locations and about $100 million in sales. And they focus on three distinct markets, financial, education, and direct mail. What's interesting is we talked to John Sisson, their CTO and CMO, and he basically said, successful implementation of data-driven solutions requires a combination of the right software, processes, and expertise. And what they do is they work with their clients, and they have a solution called UDrive, to achieve their goals in getting the right message to the right person at the right time in the right format. What they understand is truly the economics of distributing communications and the importance of choosing the right medium to achieve ROI. Mottram, actually from DAR, said that 40% of his staff members today are knowledge workers. They've got 6 full-time programmers. And he also communicated that data-driven marketing says that I've got to retool my workforce so that I've got the right talent on board. Now, the processes include building measurement into the campaign. And what that means is every new campaign's got to be tracked, and you've got to look at and use data analytics, content management, cross-media deployment, and sales and account management of services that support that cross-media value chain. Those are critical core competencies as you sit down and look at the world of data-driven marketing. The key thing is you may not have the resources to do it internally, or you may not have had time to build out the right talent pool. Well, that's where a company like Catalyst or some of their competitors or peers in the industry can help relative to building out and supporting you with a data analytics structure. The next critical component for success is obviously data. And what we're finding is that companies have data, but what they categorize is the fact that they are data rich and actually information poor. In the study that we did, Capturing the Cross-Media Marketing Opportunity, we talked to more than 500 marketers, and we asked them to rank the quality of their data. Believe it or not, 70% of the respondents said that the quality of their data was average or below. Now, when you think about it, we've got a group of PSPs on the line that can offer consistent color and other graphical forms for differentiation, but that's really no longer a competitive advantage. Those are table stakes. And what you want to understand is that with the considerable amount of data that exists from both internal and external resources, the savvy service provider really needs to look at how to develop data-oriented skills or partner with somebody so that they can help their customers improve return on investment from every marketing campaign. Now, the next thing, and what I frequently get when I'm doing webinars like this is, Barb, you mentioned all of those big companies, and we can't afford to get in the game. One of the other companies I interviewed was a smaller company who talked to us about technology. And technology is clearly an enabling component. It enables you to execute, react, and manage the campaign in real time. Now, I would also tell you that technology can't make up for deficiencies in culture and philosophy, people, or processes. What we're finding is that there are smaller printers that have figured it out and that have done it without making a massive capital investment. I interviewed Craig Fallon, and Craig titles himself as the Chief Executive Optimizer at Gateway Digital. And basically, they've been serving the print and direct mail market for more than 28 years. They started as a small offset printing and walk-up copy service in 1982. They added mailing services in the early 1990s. And then they worked with their clients on preparing direct mail and showing them how to save money doing direct mail. Today what they've done is they've become what they categorize as a business partner that provides new and innovative solutions for clients' print and mailing needs. And what Craig told me is he said, you know, Barb, there are plenty of tools to deliver data-driven services. You don't need the most expensive or robust solution to deliver meaningful business results. What Gateway does is they're leveraging software-as-a-service models, cloud computing models, and they're using tools from Mindfire, PrintShop Mail, and DirectSmile. Craig said, you know, it's not about the hardware or software tools today. It's about how you actually deploy those tools to deliver a return on the customer's marketing dollars. And so as we look at the market today, what I like to tell everybody is you should be taking just a couple minutes now to ask yourself a set of serious questions. And that's, have you got the right culture, the right management direction to participate in the data-driven market? If you don't, can you create a different mindset? If not, what are the implications for your business if you can't really play in the data game? Can you find the right people to create the right processes, or do you need to find a partner? And can you define a path to evolve with an affordable tool set? I will tell you that I'm going to end basically where I started, and then I'm going to review the Q&A tab here. But marketers want to do targeted campaigns. They both want to and need to hit their targets. And from a print service provider perspective and a marketing perspective, if you keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep getting what we're getting. And that's a quote from Stephen Covey. And I don't think that anybody is, in fact, satisfied with the status quo. So now I'm going to go back to the Q&A tab, and we'll see what kind of questions we've had come in. I see a number of them here. And the first one, and I'm going to ask Steve, but is, you know, it seems that you're referring to relationships that are long term with your client base. And how do you start that process in terms of the deep dive into data? Does it take you 3 months? Does it take you a year? How long does it take you to get that relationship going and get a new program started, Kevin?
Sure. Thanks, Barb. It does seem like some of those things are long term, but you know, I guess Rome wasn't really built in a day. So these things tend to evolve over time. So maybe they start in a fairly simplistic way. So maybe it's that you spend some time thinking about how are we going to create a marketing database, even a fairly simple one that collects both contact data, responder data, web clicks, pearl hits, things like that, that evolves over time. And then that asset really becomes more and more valuable as time goes by. So maybe the value that you're contributing really is as either the keeper or the advocate for ongoing systemic data collection.
And one more question for you, Kevin, and that is, are there any what you would categorize as out-of-the-box software solutions that a PSP could purchase to do some of the data, even if it's less sophisticated, data analytics and data profiling?
Well, there's a couple. Obviously, the one that comes to mind that generate or sort of that caters to the agency and PSP market would be like an Alterian at the higher end of that space, or maybe a Smart Focus that caters to maybe the mid-market that really has an out-of-the-box product that can be a simple marketing database as well as analytics, campaign reporting, potentially things like data profiling.
And just one other quick comment. You know, one of the key questions that everybody asks is, you know, how do I get started? You know, Craig Fallon from Gateway Digital started simple. And what he did is he started working with auto dealerships. And he helped them in terms of looking at their data and saying, you know, when are leases up on cars, which is data that the client's got, and then when should I start remarketing to upsell or resell that client? They then expanded that into the service department to do reminders for oil changes. So those were not complicated tasks, and the customer had data. And what Craig did is help them figure out how to use it more effectively. I think you need to look at the customer's business and say, you know, I'm going to start simple, but there are some simple applications that get you in the data game. I would also tell you if you've got a major account that's got complex databases that you need to mine, you're going to wind up maybe calling somebody like Catalyst to say, hey, you know, would you be my friend and work together with me on a more significant or a much larger opportunity. Now, with that, what I would like to do, since we're at the top of the hour, is thank everybody for taking the time to attend the webinar. If you want additional information about webinar series, you can check out the Printing Impressions website. And I'd also ask everybody to take a minute to fill out the feedback survey. Thanks, and have a great rest of the day.